This is Drive Through Radio on AM 790. Call Paul and John Zangari now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. Drive Through Radio with Paul and John Zangari on your station for talking business, AM 790.
Good morning and welcome to Drive Through Radio. Car care for you right here on AM 790. I'm Adam Zangari, along with my dad, Paul.
Good morning, Adam.
His little brother, John.
Hello there, Zangaris. And
our special guest for today, Joe Paleo.
Hi, Adam. Hi, John. Hi, Paul.
Good morning.
And, of course, as always, our producer, Brett Ferruccio.
Hello, hello.
All right.
All right. Now, these guys are here to answer all your car questions, so don't be shy and call us at 401-437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790.
And if you have a question with your antique car, maybe Joe knows if it's at least old enough.
If it's 100 years old or so, he's probably the only living authority on a lot
of
stuff.
Well, that's not entirely true.
Well, within the sound of our voice here.
I'm certain true.
Okay. And we're not even talking technical augmentation here. We're just talking within the sound of our voice. But, you know, it's funny. I just thought of something coming in this morning. I bumped into a neighbor of mine, Jared Bethel, and his grandfather has been in our neighborhood ever since, well, before we were in our neighborhood, but I've known him all my life. And I had asked him, I said, Jared, I hadn't seen your grandfather driving his 50 Ford until, you know, like a few days ago. He said, oh, it was off the road. It had an ignition problem. It would keep cutting out. I said, check the wire under the breaker plate. He goes, we finally did. If you got an old car question or a modern car question, give us a call. You know, the funny thing is, that was the very first thing I ever had to fix on the 34 Chevy, way back when, which was, you know, the first car that I had as a, you know, my own responsibility to take care of. And what do you know? The ignition kept cutting out for no good reason.
I had a Plymouth. The 56 Plymouth used to do that too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was a universal thing. You have this little piece of metal that's underneath the distributor cap that has to move back and forth, not all that far, but literally, you know, hundreds of times per mile, and you drive a lot of miles, and it's a wire that's just like any other wire, and especially what they used to insulate them back then wasn't expected to last forever. The cars were, you know, what did they figure, 7 or 8 years before the car would go?
I would think that's probably about right, yes.
Yeah, but you kept your car beyond a dozen years, and stuff like that would go.
So. Well, I replaced a wire such as that on a inboard engine on maybe a 20-foot Ski Nautique. I don't know the actual length, but it was about that length.
Mm-hmm.
With a Ford 351 sitting in the
middle
seat,
thing,
I guess you could say.
Car had a distributor. It had a breaker plate.
Well, they all had.
Yeah, car, if the engine had a distributor, it would have a breaker plate. And, I mean, until the electronics came along, and once they actually had a way of vacuum advancing.
Without vacuum.
Yeah.
By the way, the boat
they had manual advance, too.
The boat didn't have vacuum advance. It was all mechanical.
It was mechanical?
Yeah. There usually isn't a vacuum-type situation happening on a boat the way it does in a car. So.
Well, because so many things in a car are controlled by vacuum.
Well, no. It's because, like, you don't go uphill in a boat.
No.
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 And so there's no need to retard the timing.
I take that as a challenge.
Yeah.
Actually,
Niagara Falls.
I think if you watch some of the movies, like Indiana Jones type movies, he goes down them. There's other people who try to go up them.
Yeah. Yeah. But you reminded me of something that Dave Bowman had told me. Now, I'm not talking Dave Bowman from 2001, A Space Oddity. The real Dave Bowman, the one that I used to work with at Fram.
Oh, the real one, huh?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, and Dave grew up in Indianapolis, and one of his first jobs was working for Louis Meyer, who was, you know, from Meyer Drake Racing and an Indianapolis champion himself. And you know, we're talking about something having to do with engine controls and, you know, the different operating regimes. And he says, you know, it's tougher to get a passenger car to operate right because it's got to run under all of these different speed conditions, high load, low load, going uphill, going downhill, you know, not a lot of acceleration, a lot of acceleration. He says, with the racing cars, you're just building it to go flat out.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah, they don't. I think that since, I don't know, probably, certainly by the 60s, they don't have any spark advance at all.
What do you mean, the in racing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're fully advanced, so permanently set at the optimum speed.
Yeah, because why
not
bother?
There's not a lot of traffic lights and idling needed in a race.
Right. No, I mean, you get yellow flag conditions and you slow down a little, but for the most part, what do you want to do? You want to get there before the other guy. What does that mean? You don't go slow,
right.
Or at least not intentionally. So... It did make a lot of sense. So anyway, that's why there's a whole bunch of, layers upon layers of complication on passenger cars to get them to work under all the different conditions that passenger cars encounter. Hey, you know, one reason that Joe is here this morning, aside from the fact that we have been friends since forever, early 70s.
Since high school.
Yeah,
high school. Joe
yeah.
and I were in the same grade.
And Joe and I knew each other from an extracurricular we were involved in.
Yes.
So, Adam, keep this in mind. You'll probably know some of the people you meet in high school the rest of your life.
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah, especially in today's age with all the... social media.
It's easier to keep in contact. Yeah, once you move far away, it doesn't matter.
Time.
It's still going to be right in front of you, about 18 inches, not even 18 inches away from your nose.
We've had conversations about that, actually.
Yeah, I know.
2x3.5-inch screen.
Yeah. You know, it drives me nuts. There are times, you know, professionally, I have to text, right? I hate typing with my thumbs. I'm used to a real keyboard. I use almost all my fingers. Yeah, but pinkies don't do a lot. But it's
actually know
crazy.
How to type. So.
Yeah, rub it in. Yeah, we used to set type for granted.
Well, that goes back a few years.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, nobody does that anymore. But
well, I'm sure somebody does because somebody wants it for some crazy reason on the one machine that's left.
Yep. One of the things that one of the reasons that Joe is here is because it is that time of year.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
Christmas is coming.
Oh, yeah.
I may be one of the first to say that, the word.
The C word, huh?
Yeah, the C word.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas.
As former Governor Chafee would say, we have a holiday tree in our living room right now.
Ooh.
Well, we do. But at any rate, it's from just up the street. From actually behind where we used to hang out, one of the main locations in Joe's book, Getting Home Alive.
And that's why he's here, just in case Paul brought that.
We're working on
that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's the book about John Zangary.
Of course.
Right.
Of course.
Yes, and why he's, if there weren't such a thing as a statute of limitations, he'd be rotting in Cranston.
Well, the reason we jokingly say that, because the first sentence of the first paragraph of the first page of the first chapter has only one name in it, and it's mine.
Yeah, but I'm in the foreword, so there.
Well, who
and
reads
I get
that?
One mention in, like, the last
chapter. Yeah, Adam's in the book. Yeah.
I know.
Right.
I was, what, two?
Yeah, about that.
Yeah. I keep kicking myself. I didn't have you crawling over the Chrysler when I took its picture.
he can do it again. It's the Chrysler's still around, so he could crawl over
it's
the Chrysler.
It's kind of buried at the moment.
Might put some few dents in it now.
You mean crawling
over?
It's
a little bit heavier now.
Yeah, yeah,
so
just
a little bit. Just a wee bit.
Yeah. He's no longer just a wee child. But at any rate, you can win a copy of Joe's book, Getting Home Alive, which it does kind of chronicle some of the absolutely... A friend of mine...
Stupid
says, how
things?
Says, how come you guys didn't get killed? I said, that's why the title of the book.
Yes.
Some of the crazy things we did, you know, dealing with old cars.
One of the things that you have to say a book about the things we did in this book, don't try this at home.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
And let's see, the subtitle is, I'm trying to read upside down, but it's on the back. So
yeah, okay.
Memories of car collecting before I got civilized.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the other part, they had about the dirty.
Oh, that's the little, that's Stewart's, Stewart's introduction to the back of the book there.
The inside story of car collecting back when it was dirty, dangerous, and fun.
And fun,
yeah. We put the D in dangerous.
Yeah.
I thought we put the D in dirty.
Well, that happened a lot,
too. My mother had a theory about how I restored cars.
Yes.
He told someone that I threw myself at the car until all the dirt was on me.
There's something to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. At any rate, we have a copy to give away, which we'll actually have a little trivia contest after the first break.
Yep.
We'll come back with that. But I did want to take a moment just to mention someone. Unfortunately, we tried to plan this out, but some of you may know we have new automation here at the station, and there are not many pieces of music that we can just go to and play when we want to, because we would have run Corvair Baby for this. But
I found Corvair Baby.
You've got it. All right. Then we'll leave with that after we wrap this up. Good work, Brett. Thanks. And that is challenging, because it's not only a matter of finding it, it's, you know, understanding the new equipment. So we said goodbye to Henry Barry last night. He was our neighbor when we were growing up. Henry was 95. And he was the Corvair guy at Pierce Chevrolet.
In now, Pawtucket?
Yep. And, I mean, we did a lot of Corvair work, partly because the cars were cheap, but also because we understood them. And sure, I think we each taught ourselves a lot of what we know about them, all three of the guys who've worked on cars in mm-hmm. this room. We got a lot of experience with Paul Barry's first car.
Not related.
Well, yeah, but that's right. That's right, not related to Henry. But whenever we hit a stumper, Henry was there across the street. And I remember one of them, because the funny thing is, I found a picture of one of my first major Corvair projects. Mm-hmm. And it was when I was swapping powertrains between my first one, the red one, and the black one, which was my second one, because mm-hmm. I was keeping the red car, but the black one had the high-performance powertrain in it.
Yep.
So I've got both cars jacked up, and I'm going to just swap, right? I go to put the complete engine and four-speed transmission underneath the red one, and it won't fit.
Oh!
And I take a look under the black one, and I see there's this little relief cut in the frame. So I asked Henry about it. He says, yeah. He told me they weren't planning on putting four speeds in them, and they wound up cutting notches in every car they put the four speed in. He says, you can do one of two things. You can cut a notch yourself, or you can swap the rear suspensions. It's not hard. There's only four bolts that hold it in. And that's what I did. But I do remember that one specifically.
Yeah.
So anyway, we said goodbye to Henry. Actually, the funeral is going to be maybe about a half hour from now. I made a point of starting my Corvair up last night and taking it to the wake, and Sheila, his daughter, was telling me that she's expecting at least one Corvair in the funeral today.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, which is kind of neat. So this one's for Henry. Hey, you're my baby, my Corvair baby, and I'll never let you go.
When we come back, we've got some trivia for you, and we'll be giving away Getting Home Alive. It's tough to say, believe me.
It is.
Anyway, our phone number's to call. When you come back, our 401-437-5000 and 1-888-345-0790. Drive Through Radio will be right back after this.
Pollock.
It's time for some useless information, everybody.
That's right.
Although, except this time, it's not so useless.
No, not really, because if you know the answer that is otherwise useless,
you could win a copy of Getting Home Alive by Joe Paleo.
Which will have Joe autograph for you, too.
I'll autograph it, too.
Oh,
of course. Fact, the star of the show.
I guess you're right, yeah. All right. So that's right. It's time for drive-through trivia. It's something that's an occasional feature of the show.
Yeah, every like now and then. Around this time of year.
Yeah, you know, when we have something to give away. And, of course, it means that you'll win a copy of Joe's book, Getting Home Alive, Memories of Car Collecting Before It Got Civilized. But you have to know the answer to this question. If you're the first person to call in, and Adam, you might as well give the phone numbers
again. Yes, I'll remind you of the numbers again. They are 401-437-5000 and 1-888-345-0790. So get ready.
Yeah, and again, if you're the first one to get through to Brett with the correct answer to this question, the book will be here for you to pick up during normal business hours at the station. All right, the question, this is a tough one. What the book is about, or to be exact, what John thinks the book is about. Should I say who John thinks the book is about? All right, again.
And
good luck.
The first person to call in with the correct answer wins an autographed copy, which is a $22 value. Now,
it's priceless with the autographs.
And if you know the answer and you weren't the first one to call in, you can purchase the book still on Amazon, right, Joe? There's still a few copies left.
As Jeff Bezos adds to his $100 billion pile.
Jeff needs some more money.
Yeah. So. Yeah, just encourage him to build his headquarters in Pawtucket, you know.
Yeah. Huh? So you can get it. Just make sure you get the one that's by Joe Paleo.
Yeah, there is another book called Getting Home Alive, which is about something entirely different.
It's not about cars.
It's definitely not about cars.
It was also not reviewed by Rob McClellan in Houston.
There's
a very nice review online. It's still posted, even though Rob's retired. And I don't know that his website's going to be up forever, but it was really quite nice. We ought to. One thing that we had until the automation was changed was the story of the day we brought the big Rolls Royce home.
You recorded that.
Actually, George Kennedy had a lot to do with recording that. George had organized, and I think he's still doing them occasionally, but he had organized the first Motor Mouth Insider Series, it was called, lectures at the Lars Anderson Auto Museum about things that had to do with collecting cars or automotive topics in general. So Joe and I were there, and if anyone's heard of the Moth, which is, you know, essentially it's a storytelling exercise in front of audiences.
Oh, okay.
We told the story. Joe, being the lead on this, I filled in some details. And then when I started talking about something that I forgot details on, Joe filled them in about the day we dragged the Rolls Royce home. And that was really quite an adventure. And it probably runs about 15 minutes. But some of the highlights, the
and
rope.
And if I was there, I could have made up stuff because I didn't go on that
trip. You weren't
there.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of the highlights, like the rope. Joe's laughing.
The slowly getting smaller rope.
We were
shorter and shorter. Yes.
Yeah. Andy Mowbray, who's the who was I guess you could say our godfather in the car collecting game.
Unwilling co-conspirator.
Yeah. Somehow or other.
Well, he was a willing co-conspirator on this, but it was his idea.
He volunteered.
It was his idea.
Yeah. It was his idea.
I thought he just didn't have the heart to say no.
No. Joe had bought what may have been the biggest P1 Rolls-Royce, Phantom 1, which was
tallest.
The series that followed, that followed the Silver Ghost from Ted Leonard, and it was at Ted's house in Seekonk, and we're getting it home to the Paleo estate.
I think
in
that
Lincoln.
It was. I think that it was 19 feet long and 9 feet tall.
Yeah,
it is on the cover, and it is. You know, if there was another car next to it, you would see how tall it was, but against scrub brush and trees, you can't really tell.
However, your sister
is a tall
keep in mind that my sister, who was about 13 or 14 when I bought it, could stand up in the back seat and walk around.
Yeah, it did have that kind of room. But whereas the car did roll, it did not Royce. It needed to be towed home, and Andy volunteered his four-cylinder, four-on-the-floor Volvo station wagon.
Oh, boy.
To tow this building from Seekonk to Lincoln. And we thought that, well, we knew, first of all, you do not tow. The ideal way, I suppose, is to tow with a tow bar. But cars weren't set up for that. So the next thing is, you know, one thing that you do not do to tow one vehicle behind another is to use a chain. Because you need to have something that's got a little bit of give to it, because you'll get slack, you'll get tight. Slack, tight. So guess what happens every time it tightens up? you pull something off either vehicle.
Or the chain breaks.
Or the chains don't break as readily as this rope did.
Yeah, but the thing with a chain that always scares me is that if it breaks and it goes flying and snaps, it hits the car, either the first car or the tow car or the towed car.
Yes, and...
and breaks something like glass.
And when we say towed car, it is the past tense of tow. It has nothing to do with little critters that hop.
That's correct.
Right.
And that's why a chain is not your best choice.
No, no. So we used a rope, but it kept getting shorter, and part of it had to do with, I guess, one of the brakes on the Rolls-Royce worked a little too well.
Well, actually, the brakes on the Rolls-Royce barely worked at all. when they did work, they grabbed.
Right. And I think it was one more than any of the others, right?
Well, the others probably didn't work at all.
Right.
But they're mechanical, so it's not the problem that a car that sits with hydraulic brakes for years runs into, where wheel cylinders don't move.
Actually, on a Phantom 1, they're not quite mechanical.
Well, they're servo-assisted, but...
Right. So you would think they wouldn't have worked at all, or they would have been very difficult
to
work.
Well, hard to use, yeah, because
very hard
the assist wouldn't have been there.
Right.
Yeah.
But that wasn't true. They would lock up.
Yeah. So any time that... And ideally, when you're towing this idiotic way, the car that's being towed is the one that's trying to slow down the whole juggernaut. That keeps the tautness on whatever the medium is for towing. And so when you would attempt to slow down, you certainly did, but then Andy would wind up continuing on his way.
Because the rope would break every time I touched the brakes. Mm.
And you know, the second time this happened, while we were still in Ted's neighborhood, someone came up with a way of helping, he thought.
Yes, he gave us another rope.
A big, strong, industrial rope.
Yes, he said, and you won't break this one.
Want to bet?
You know what? It probably was pretty old, too.
Well, it may have been.
The industrial strength rope. They do go bad after a while.
Yeah, but at any rate, so we had two ropes with a little more length on the old, for lack of a better term, clothesline that was between the two cars that, you know, if one broke, the other might last a few more feet. And that didn't get us all that far. But this brings up something. I mean, we're kind of, you know, doing the condensed version. This is only a one-hour show. Where we got to what was then known as the mixed-up mile, as a traffic reporter gave it that name, and it was essentially the connection between 95 and 146 when it went through the old railroad yard.
And by the way, today the same traffic jam is still there.
On the new roads.
Yeah.
Yes. But at least the new roads are not as mixed up as they used to be. You know, you can see the connection from one road to the other.
I mean, the problem with the mixed-up mile was just that it only got worked on in election years.
Well, true.
Between elections, nothing ever happened.
Yeah, and so it not only was it mixed up, it was also messed up. So
it was.
Yeah. It was under construction for about 15 years, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, 7 of which it was under construction.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, that was every 2-year elections. At least you got things completed that much quicker.
True.
But anyway, so one time the rope breaks over there, and we got some help, didn't we?
Yes. Two fellows hitchhiking who, they didn't know what they were getting into. I told them that we'd give them a ride if they helped us with the rope.
Yeah.
They lasted about 2 breaks and then went screaming across 146.
Yeah, they just took off in a shot. Yeah, and I took off.
Absolutely certain they've been kidnapped by maniacs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I took off without Stuart without Drew at the very beginning of this whole thing.
Because you also stood up in your Corvair and yelled at somebody
who was trying to pull between the Volvo and the Rolls.
Rolls, yes. Mm.
Well,
I don't know how. It was a convertible. I wouldn't have been able to do that in a coupe. And the top was down.
Did the car make it?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
It didn't fit in the garage.
No.
Yeah. It was too tall.
It was too tall to go in the garage. Well, we didn't think to measure that, so we let the air out of the tires.
And I think we still had to
pushed it in.
And stand people on the running boards because the weight of this big, bad Rolls Royce wasn't enough to get those ancient tires with the air out of them to go down enough on its own.
So a few more 100 pounds on each side.
And it was just enough.
And it just scraped under the garage door.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And your parents had an oversized height garage door.
Yes, and my father came out and just shook his head.
The good old days that I know nothing about.
Yeah, okay. Hey, just a reminder, we may have to come up with a new question, but Joe's book, Getting Home Alive, is really the memories of car collecting before it got civilized. John thinks it's about somebody. Who might that be? That's
our
question.
We just gave you the abridged version, and anyway, we're going to head to break, but you can still call us during the break at 401-437-5000. Or 1-888-345-0790. We're taking your car questions, and we're also taking your answers to our question about who Uncle John thinks the book is about. Anyway, Drive Through Radio will be right back after this. Welcome back to Drive Through Radio, where we have to congratulate Bob in Pawtucket for winning our copy of Getting Home Alive.
So what is it that he knew?
He knew who Uncle John thought the book it was about.
And that would be?
That would be Uncle John himself.
That is correct.
All right. Yeah,
anyway, there's a reason we're playing signs, right?
There is. This week, the state of Rhode Island will waste 20%...
Under duress.
Will waste 20% of our tax dollars to put in new exit signs on Route 95, 195, and 295 starts, I guess, Monday.
295 is where it starts.
Yeah, and it's going to start in Cumberland, so the people in our neck of the woods will be confused for a little bit of time. Now, I don't know for sure if they're starting at, let's say, the Mass Line and working their way down on the southbound side, or are they working on both sides, so both exits get the new, both sides get the same sign, at the same time.
I don't know, but the
I
funny
don't know
thing
which
is,
way it's going, but that's
crazy
it
thing about
there.
It. Crazy thing, one of many crazy things about it is I don't usually, you know, having grown up here, I usually think of an exit as the exit to, you know, like Roger Williams Park, although Adam knew the exit number when he was 3, but you know,
he must have gone there way too much.
but you did.
I went there a little bit.
You've been there once.
I haven't
or twice.
Been there in like 5 years.
Yeah, but at any rate, the exit where one of the few exits that I know the number of is where we get off 295, which is exit 10, and I believe that's going to be exit 20 because the mile marker near it is nearest it. Is 20 point something.
I believe the zero mark is
towards Warwick Mall. Yeah, towards
in
the malls.
Warwick.
Yeah,
Warwick.
Where it runs into Route 2.
A town with Warwick in its name.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, in this state, because there are others. But
who cares about that?
Well, I know we're talking about the Rhode Island construction project. In some places, it makes perfect sense to. I mean, the idea of having it at the mile
Wyoming.
Markers. Well, we have one of those. The idea behind
I was thinking the state.
I know. The idea behind using mile markers as your indications of your exits is because if you wind up adding a new exit when you're out there in Wyoming and suddenly a town appears, you know, between these exits that were 90 miles apart, you know, you have exit 200 and you have exit 110, you can put in exit 140. And it also helps you know about how far down the road to go to get there.
Which, by the way, is an out-of-date concept because...
Should be kilometers?
No.
No?
Because... Oh, wait till that happens.
Yeah, right. Yeah. No kidding.
All right. It's out of date because...
That's going to be for you to deal with, Adam.
Most people who don't know Rhode Island would have to have their GPS, which always tells them how far it is to the next exit. They're taking.
Speaking of GPS.
So they don't really need that. And, don't trust your GPS.
No. Speaking of GPS, because we got another 09 Ford Flex, and it has the navigation system built in it.
Does the other one?
No.
Okay.
No. The nav hasn't been updated since the car was built.
Yeah.
In 09. So when
so
we're...
So your street's not there?
No.
Like the oldest one in
no,
town?
No. No, our street goes back... Yeah, literally, it is the oldest street in town. But coming here... When we're taking 195, that map was installed in the car before the I-way was built. So we'll be going home right over the river and part of downtown. So the nice thing about it is you can actually download the update onto a flash drive and put it in.
But well,
it,
that
it
would
cracks
come
me
in
up.
Handy. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, that, something I'll definitely do before we take a trip in it.
That's for sure. That would be a good idea. Yeah. Now, by the way, a little aside to this.
Yeah.
Rhode Island is not the last state to have these signs. One of the other last states is Massachusetts.
I know.
And you know what they said? We'll take it under advisement.
I think that was the right
move.
We'll
study it. There's no reason to do this. Spend all this money for zero gain.
Yeah, because in states where there are exits so close together, we literally have exits that are less than a mile apart.
Four of them in downtown Providence.
Yeah.
So. And I think there's five coming in the other direction.
Yeah, so... What are you going to call them? Exit? I'm not sure how far up it is from Richmond, I guess, which is where it starts.
How are you with the alphabet?
Yeah, but now A, B, C on exit 22, which is downtown, I think one of them goes to the mall. One of them goes to Memorial Boulevard. One of them goes to downtown, right?
You mean like Cianci's apartment complex?
Yeah, that sort of thing. Yeah, you go around it, yeah.
Yeah.
So now... I just don't know how they're going to handle it. Again, I'm not sure how many miles it is from the Connecticut border, if that's the direction where exit 1 is, but let's say that becomes, 30 miles in. All right, is there going to be exit 30A left, exit 30, or, A sub B, or it's just not going to work.
Yeah, you know what? And again, no gain, zero.
Yeah.
Zero in Rhode Island.
Well, no. Who do you know in the sign business? Who do you know in the sign business?
Oh, I don't. I actually, Dion's, but from that, I don't.
Jack DeMello's family used to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think when his father retired,
his father died when we were in high school.
Or his uncle, I think.
Yeah, his uncle.
Yeah. So that was.
So the Dion's and Jack's uncle's family.
Yeah, and actually the Bunnells, Federal Signs.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's still it's. Just because the feds are picking up 80% of that. By the way...
Oh, who pays the feds?
Yeah, I was wondering. Who pays that? That is the federal income tax.
It's not Xi Jinping, is it?
Federal gas tax.
No.
You know, so...
Yes, and you cheapskate with your 50 miles per gallon.
On a bad day?
Yeah, I know.
I get upset when I don't get 60.
Yeah, I go...
So, just along with... wasting taxpayers' money.
Yeah.
I finally got to go through an intersection.
Without stopping?
That's correct. I did not stop because it had a rotary.
No, geez. Ooh.
And this is a T-style intersection.
Should have been a T-style.
No, it is still is.
Okay. With this round thing in the middle of it.
Yeah. And it has a traffic light hanging there, covered up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Charles Street. I think is still in Central Falls as you go into Pawtucket, Charles Street. And as you approach it, you see the signs for the rotary and all this other baloney yield. And I'm getting there, and there's nobody in the rotary, and it's a tiny one. And there's people on the left stopped, even though the sign says yield to the rotary. Mm-hmm. They're stopped. They don't know what to do. All right? They don't know what to do. And now that they put that stupid rotary there, tractor trailers can't make a left-hand turn.
Oh, boy. Yeah, they don't fit.
So they wasted the money to put that there. Yeah. They've got the light hanging that's sitting
doing
there.
Doing nothing.
Doing nothing. Actually, what they should have done in the first place was put a stop sign there 50 years ago, and it would have been just
fine. Probably would have been fine. Yep. So just before we go to the break here, I just wanted to say it another say goodbye thing. Another friend who was in their 90s, Harriet Dever, who's a name you may not know and you may not recognize her. But if you remember the Channel 36 auctions and all of the fundraisers, she was the volunteer extraordinaire. Harriet was 92. She passed away earlier this month. But after she retired from Parkview Elementary, she decided that she wasn't going to sit idle. And she volunteered in a number of places. We were one of them. And the amazing thing is, as we would get ready for the auctions, and at the time she would have been well into her 80s, we'd be looking at addresses of donors or people who had come and bought things when we're going to ship. And she'd be, Jeff Hartley and I and, some of the other people who worked auction would be, putting information down. She'd look at it, she'd know, wrong zip code. In her 80s.
Did she work for the post office?
No. She worked at Parkview middle school in Cranston. But yeah, she volunteered for us, I think, for Meeting Street and a few other people. Harriet was pretty darned amazing, and she's going to be missed. So goodbye, Harriet.
She really was.
Yeah, yeah, you remember her too.
Oh yeah, I do. She and I were. She was great. Anyway, when we come back, we do our annual segment. Well, not annual. We fit 10 minutes of information into 5 minutes. And if you want to call, if you got a car question, it's got to be really quick. But our numbers are 401-437-5000 and 1-888-345-0790. Drive Through Radio. We'll be right back after this.
Side of the road, damn brakes locked up in the red. Smoke's pouring out from under my hood. Stuck on the highway again. Too young to quit, too old to change. Baby, what am I gonna do? I got chop top slammed down, 49 Mercury Blues.
Welcome back to Drive Through Radio, where these guys have been reminiscing about the past, and I can't really relate.
Well, no, your past is much shorter. But actually, Adam, we're going to be losing you for a couple of shows.
We are, because I'm going to be going to Driver's Ed the next few weeks.
Yeah. Hey, that's important. Very important.
And, I'll finally know more about cars.
Yeah, actually, you can learn more in the driveway than as far as
about
the cars themselves. You know how to drive. Actually, you... been doing all right in the parking lot, but yeah.
Haven't been doing much.
No, but yeah, we got have at
it'll
least
be
one
nice
more,
to get this
one
over
more
with.
Session. Yeah, yeah. You'll be the only bus driver in the crew there.
Yeah.
With a couple of Ford Flexes, they're like buses. But I had to laugh, John. Someone left a copy of the North Providence edition of the Valley Breeze here, and as a former auto technology teacher at Davies, Davies Auto students get hands on a police car.
No one knew what they're doing with that.
Put their own hidden kill switches somewhere.
Yeah.
Or when they get the ride home in the middle of the night.
hopefully the police department delivered it to Davies, didn't go
as opposed to just kind of showed up one night.
You mean like at MIT where it shows up on the roof?
On the roof. Yeah, well, that was their own version of a police car, wasn't it?
Actually, it was
Chevy Cavalier. I think it was a Cavalier. It was a little car.
Yeah, well, it doesn't really matter if it was little or not, because it wasn't a whole car.
Right,
it was just a shell.
Yeah.
It was just a shell, like 2x4s. Kind of
holding the pieces together.
Yeah, that kind
of thing. So a police car shows up on the dome, I guess it was.
Great Dome.
The Great Dome
at MIT. There's two domes in the same area, so one's the Great Dome. Mm-hmm. And lots of things have shown up on there. And one of my favorite ones is the when they made it look like R2-D2.
Yeah, the dome.
And
which is started life as a vacuum cleaner, I believe. But.
Actually, that's according to the salesman for Rex Air Rainbow,
which is R2 right there,
and the model
D2 was kind of shaped like that,
a lot shaped like that.
Yeah, so we know where the inspiration came
from. Yes, yes, and one more thing on the police car on the MIT dome.
Yep,
it had a box of Dunkin' Donuts on the dashboard.
Well, of course, but most people from the ground couldn't see that.
True.
No, you know, one of the things before the show wraps up that I think is worth talking about is something that people forget about in servicing cars. To the extent, it really helped me out when we got the first Flex 2 years ago.
Okay.
Because it acted like it had a transmission problem, and I'm sure that's why the price of that thing was so bloody reasonable. And I think the guy that I bought it from was a little bit disingenuous about the transmission work that the car, quote unquote, had. However, if you really know what you're feeling and what you're checking for, you get to realize that what was wrong was nothing in the transmission. A set of spark plugs fixed the problem.
Yeah.
What was happening was if you're riding along in sixth, top gear,
Got that many speeds?
It's a six-speed, and you're at the slowest speed that it will comfortably maintain, and you go to gradually accelerate so that it doesn't downshift and pick up engine RPM. It starts to hesitate and buck a little bit because you're in a condition where momentum isn't helping the engine turn.
Yes, but
it's
because of the load that's on the engine with the weak spark plugs.
Exactly. Your cylinder pressures are kind of at their highest at that point. The little fire that's trying to light on a spark plug that's worn out gets blown out. And so the car hesitates like crazy. Then you've forced the downshift by stepping a little bit harder on it, and it runs okay.
Yep.
It takes off because no longer you've got momentum working for you. The cylinder pressures have dropped a little bit.
And the load is less.
Yeah.
Because you're in a lower gear.
Yeah. So that's all it was. And there's a little hint of that. You know, the thing is that, Joe, you remember when spark plugs had to be cleaned how often?
Oh, too often.
Like every 5,000 miles or something.
Or less.
Or less, yeah.
Daily?
Yeah, and now, you know, with 100,000 miles being the average for a spark plug, people just don't remember to change them. And, Joe, we've only got about a minute, but what was there before spark plugs?
Oh, you mean hot tubes?
Yeah.
Hot tube ignition.
There were also igniters.
Yeah, well.
Which are like little tiny coils.
Right there.
That are screwed into the side of the engine.
And but do they get hot?
No.
No.
No, they work like they were like buzzer coils that.
Oh, okay. So you got a little bzzz right there. Yeah, yes. Right then and there. And then the spark plug was an improvement that came along about 115 years ago.
I think the spark plug appears about 1903.
So yeah, 114 years ago.
Oh, all right.
Okay.
Well, I don't do math in my head very well.
Okay, so yeah, as you can see, automotive technology marches on.
Yeah.
We'll have to talk about hot tube one of these days. It's a hoot.
Yes.
You got this little thing that's on fire next to the engine.
A Bunsen burner and a platinum tube.
Yeah.
Next to gasoline.
That you want to, not really explode, burn quickly. If it explodes, you're in trouble.
Well,
anyway.
I'm not sure that the definition of an explosion changes.
Anyway, we better turn it over to Adam while he's still here because he's leaving soon.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining Drive Thru Radio this week. If you liked today's episode and you want to listen to it again, we have podcasts online at 790business.com. Thank you, Brett, for a great show. Uncle John and Dad will be back here at the same time next Saturday.
Yeah, in the meantime, don't forget to check your mirrors, signal your turns, and check for cross traffic, too. See ya.